Today we're going to talk about integration of Christian worldview and science teaching, teaching philosophy of science to general chemistry lab students. I'm Bill Kaye. I'm from the Department of Chemistry at Oral Roberts University. I'm a physical chemistry professor there. But what got me interested in this area is I teach an honors curriculum class. Several years ago, we'd realized that we need to do a better job of integrating Christianity into the science curriculum and include some apologetic materials and deal with some issues that could help them as they move on to graduate school. So, to make a long story short, a theology professor and myself, we co-teach a class called Philosophy of Science, and I've talked about that in previous ASA. Well, anyway, that got me into the field of philosophy of science, and I realized to fully understand a lot of issues in terms of a lot of science controversies, there is an incredible lack of knowledge on where people are in the philosophy of science. And as I re-educated myself, or basically not re-educated, educated myself, even though I became acquainted with what philosophers of science describe science as, I had been doing it all my life, but I had been unable to articulate it. So anyway, in the honors class, we talked a lot about this, but a part of me wondering is, why wait till then, and can we get it further? Could we try catching a student in the freshman year? So that's what this is talk about, is a little attempt I have to try this. What we did was last spring, I had to teach two general chemistry, two labs. This is our majors lab, so it's primarily science majors, and so these are students that tend to be more the upper tier in terms of the capabilities, and they're also very interested in science. So it's a good, most all of these are going on to engineering, biology, chemistry, pre-med type majors. The way we structure our general chemistry labs at our university is we have an hour recitation, and then we have a three-hour lab. Now, usually the lab doesn't always last 3 hours. We spend the first hour doing quizzes, going over homework, and then prepping students on things they need to know, changes in the lab and stuff. And so what we realize is that, hey, I can take the first 5 to 10 minutes of the weekly lab recitation and just try to do a mini presentation. Take 5 or 10 minutes times about 16 weeks, and that's a, you know, it's about 2 hours worth of time. And what could I teach them? And then ask myself, would they actually get anything out of it, or am I shooting completely over their heads? My main fear was just going over everybody's head. I had two general chemistry labs, Monday lab, Wednesday lab. To kind of get an idea of what I was doing, I did a survey at the beginning of the semester and at the end of the semester. I wasn't statistically rigorous with this. I only had a total pool of about 35 or 37 students total. So a lot of my analysis is eyeball analysis, chi by eye. And if I'm guilty of statistical errors, they say the practitioners of chi by eye get what they deserve. Anyway, I use a time-honored method that all teachers at university level use to get students to do a little bit of extra work is I bribe them with extra credit. So what we do, I said, guys, listen to what I'm doing. I'm going to take this stuff and present it during the summer, and if you give me an extra credit, one half a page, two-thirds of the way through, just a little write-up, I'll give you 8 points on the semester's total points. And, of course, most students don't ever sit down to figure out the total percentage, but a point is a point, so they do it. Student makeup the class, 23 on Monday, 15 on Wednesday, basically freshmen and sophomores, mainly freshmen, chemistry, biology, English, pre-med. Most every student was a science engineering major with a strong interest in science engineering. The topics I talked about, and admittedly, incredibly small snippets. And I deliberately left some of my language at a fairly high level, and I knew I was going to overshoot some of the weaker students. But I figured my best chance of getting somewhere is with the bigger ones, and if it worked halfway with them, then I'll try to consider maybe dropping it down a bit. So I started out the first one or two labs, or you could say 5 to 15 minutes, you know, worth of presentation, the simple Baconian method, which most of the students knew dead cold from high school walking in, you know, the observation, hypothesis, experiment type thing. And then moved on, I talked about what positivism was and defined it, which for most of these students, the first time they've ever heard the word positivism. The next thing we go on is a common theme that you'll see in our culture is science as fact and the religion as value model. And I start dropping hints, we have problems with this because religion is not necessarily, but it has tons of values, but it has facts, and they'll all say, yeah, 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 once you remind them of that. But when you start talking about that science is based on values, the glazed look starts and says, what are you talking about? Then we move on to inductivism and its problems, falsification, and if any of you have ever taken a basic philosophy of science class, you'll realize what I'm doing is I'm just rolling through a list of basic topics that you'll see as you go through. Then I didn't hit this much because really at this point I'm starting to get past what they can handle, but I threw in a little bit about Thomas Kuhn and the structure of scientific revolutions and the historical approach that the field took at the start of the 1960s. From there, I finish up with little summary quotes, and that's where I put in my own personal reflections and feelings, which they can buy or reject or however. And then ended up with what my personal feeling is what this does is it kind of takes science and levels it with all the other disciplines. Now, as a scientist, this is a hard thing to do because we all know chemistry is the premier discipline of all areas. And so to admit that theology and history is on the same plane with me was an incredible stroke of humility I had to go through, but I did it. So from there, personal observation, impact on Christian life. Some sample slides, like this is one I like to throw out, pull out this facts are given. This is if you want to take on induction. And that science is based on facts. Facts are directly given to careful, unprejudiced observers by the senses. And I ask the student, says, okay, are you looking down on the staircase or are you looking up at it? Y'all are familiar with diagrams like that. And I said, now what if you're someone who lives out in the Sahara Desert in a very primitive culture and you've never seen or heard of a staircase? If you looked at this diagram, what would you see? In other words, what you see is determined a lot by how you've been raised and your biases. And this, for some of these students, is the first time they've ever considered that. And it says, you know, well, when you come into scientific observation, like it or not, you bring a lot of baggage with you. And then this one right here, neglected auxiliary hypothesis. And I kind of build up to this. This is like classical electrodynamics does not work the same on the atomic level, and that's what led to the revolution in quantum mechanics from 1926 to 28. The idea, no matter what experiment you build, you've always got some hypothesis built into your experiment you do not even know exists. And you just do the best you can to cover everything you can, but you never know. And this is what threw classical people off. They didn't realize the idea that Newtonian mechanics wouldn't work on the atomic level, which was an assumption that was built in for 50 years, didn't really become apparent till after the turn of the century. Inductivisms, little things like this. No such thing as a scientific proof, generally speaking. And I talk about that. It says, I mean, it's kind of, we talk about science gives us statements of increasing and decreasing reliability. Some statements are very reliable, some statements are less so, and you as an individual, as a trained scientist, have to make that evaluation. Professional scientists understand this. I mean, I'll never forget, I was in a conversation with a very well-known computational chemist when I was on sabbatical over in Budapest, Hungary, and Gaze and I were talking, and he said, well, Bill, you know, he knew I was a Christian, said, well, Bill, you know, and I said, well, Gaze, you know, science doesn't really prove anything. And he stared at me for about 20 seconds, and then he said, you're absolutely right. And the topic of the conversation just took off another direction. So we all intuitively know this. I said, well, is this not an why do I have to wait 20 years to realize this? So we gave that one a whirl. So anyway, results of the pre- and post-survey. This is not statistically accurate. This is eye by eye. Look at it. Yep, it looks like these trends. Overall, when I did the pre and the post, the most overall, what I did was I took 40 statements. On each statement, I put A, B, C, D, strongly agree, slightly agree, neutral, slightly disagree, strongly disagree. And then I would take some concepts and reverse it. So if they felt one way, they would say strongly agree, then they'd hit it again, they'd have to say strongly disagree. That way you can check to make sure someone's not doing games with you, things like that. But anyway, most scientists, part of my fear was, would I make them thinking that scientists are a bunch of hypocrites and you can't trust anything they say, which is rather devastating to do to a general chemistry lab, particularly when you want majors out of this lab. So I did not want to have students distrusting science, or because they have a tendency to take what we go an inch, they'll go 3/4 of a mile. If you dealt with students, you know it's like that. But between pre and post, they said most students felt scientists were genuinely trying to discover the truth. It did drop a little bit, maybe 10 to 20% from the pre to the post. Had me a little bit worried, but maybe that's not necessarily bad, but you don't want to get them too much in that area. The philosophy material relates well to the chemistry lab material. Generally, everybody said, yeah, even though they didn't know what I was going to talk about at the beginning. And then at the end, they kind of split. Some liked it, some were not so sure about it. Able to analyze the perspectives of others better. Generally, they all agreed, but I saw this shift. They felt like after I went through it, they felt like they could do it a little bit better. Now, I could be fooling myself. It could be just going through the chemistry material that did it, but I think I felt like they said, you know, I think I can analyze other people's perspectives a little bit better. Respect for science, and this was encouraging, respect for science stayed high and the same in both. So they walked in with a lot of respect, and I didn't mess that up. So I felt good about that. Did the class have little effect on their Christian worldview? There was a shift to disagree. It did have some effect. Now, I'm not talking about huge, like maybe out of a class of 20, I'd get about 4 more people that would tend to be more positive. So we're just a little bit above statistical noise here. So there's a little bit of trend there. Over one half the class indicated that what they were taught before college did not prepare them for dealing with philosophical and theological challenges of modern science. They felt like they could discuss science controversies better. There was a tendency to agree, so that was good, helped out. I felt good about that. This was the discouraging part, and it says something about where we are today. I had a statement. I put it in the middle of this thing. Faith is about values. Science is about facts. On both the pre and the post, do they strongly agree, disagree? My Monday laugh. Half disagreed with it, which is kind of the response I'd want them to have on the pre, and a few more disagreed on the post. So I had some progress with the Monday lab recognizing it's not this nice clean split, guys. Don't be taken by the scientism in our culture. The Wednesday lab, to be honest, was not as strong a lab as the Monday. 2/3 agreed on the pre, and at the end, I couldn't tell much of a change. So I said, okay, we've got some issues here. But then again, let's be honest. These are freshmen. They're coming in trying to make their way through chemistry lab. And just saying, you know, this statement that science is about facts and religion about values is not really correct. You may say it 3 times, 3 weeks down the road, a lot of these kids, like they never heard you. What helped me was this. Now, granted, I pulled the best. Here's some quotes. And these are coming from, all of these are freshmen. The problem with this thought is that there's no room in the positivist mind to suggest a higher being who controls the universe. This was in a little essay there where I just pulled a little snippet out and I said, now that's an interesting concept for a freshman chemistry student to throw out. And I said, okay, I like this. In the classroom today, faith and morals have no place in the science lab. How can you have one without the other? I loved that. And I said, he got it. Either he had it before he came in or he got it. No, and Zach, I believe the scientific method is a process in which personal judgments have to be made about data, and those judgments are fallible. So all a scientist can do is his best, but he has to realize his theory can't be perfect. Not a bad start. It intertwines science and religion so they actually work together in finding truths in the world around us. Now, we can obviously find flaws in these statements, and you have to take them into context, but it showed me there was something going on upstairs, so I felt like maybe I was getting somewhere with some of the students. Finishing up, mini-observation. Well, the mini-seminar affected the worldview of maybe half of the students in some sort of a little bit of a positive way. Pretty much my goal was to debunk scientism and make them give the students a broader perspective on how science is actually done. I felt like I only succeeded partially, but I'm encouraged enough, I think I'm going to give it another try. It did not minimize the students' respect for science. I felt like we didn't do that. Scientism in our students is rampant and not easily debunked, and these are strongly religious, strongly Christian students that I deal with. These are not secular. These are kids who love Jesus a lot, and a lot of them have made sacrifices to come here. Culture is not debunked in a single lecture. This is why it's got to be a continual process over a long period of time to undo a lot of the things the culture has done with our kids. I need to drop the level and scope of the mini seminar and use more chemistry examples. And the students realize the usefulness of mini seminar. Did not feel like it was a waste of time. And how are we doing on my time here? Went too far. I think we got a little bit of time. So, we got any questions? Yeah.
So these are freshman students. Is there a core curriculum such that they'll have a course in the introduction to philosophy that might cover a unit on philosophy of science, so they can learn about falsification at some point?
No.
So
this is the. Well, no.
Granted,
one or two of these students were co-taking my philosophy of science seminar. So that may be the ones who got the really good quotes. I may have gotten one or two out of there. But by and large, the typical student, and this is for most Christian schools, I think would argue, you can go from freshman to PhD and never see a philosophy of science class. That was my experience. And I'm 20 years into my career before I looked at a philosophy of science class and I realized this would have been very useful to me. If nothing else, because one thing that bothered me, I always do research projects, and when I look at the scientific method, what I did to do these projects and write papers just didn't seem to match. I said, I'm not doing the scientific method. Well, after you take philosophy of science, you realize that's junk, and I was perfectly legitimate. I mean, we all do it, we just can't articulate it. Yeah. No, we don't. They get yes and no. They have a core curriculum in humanities of about, it used to be four, we're probably going to drop it to two or three, and there's some philosophy woven in there. The theology students get a lot of it built in, and the honor students, if they run through my philosophy of science, they pretty much cover a lot of the basic topics there. But the typical student, the most exposure they'll get through the humanities curriculum, they'll get a little bit. Long story there. We may be moving in that direction. There have been a lot of us. Pretty much, for the sake of time, I'll tell you later, it's a historical issue with the founder of the school, said there will never be no philosophy department, and because he lost one of his sons to philosophy at Stanford. And so what we did was, which may have been a better route, was we integrated it in everywhere else. So the philosophy is integrated a lot. English does a lot of it. Humanity does a lot of it. And the sciences were just kind of just start catching up. Yeah?
Do you agree that this culture of scientism that is being rampant of Christians is heavily influenced by what is popularly known as NOLA, Stephen Jay Gould's separate magisteria, that they science and religion don't overlap at all? This is commonly taught in a lot of secular schools teach this in order to try to avoid conflicts between science and faith. They just simply don't overlap. And science is the realm of facts, empirical facts. And religion is the realm of values. And they try to keep them separate that way. That's taught in common.
Yes, it's called, not only is it called taught through the public school system, I mean, it's not so much taught as it is caught. C.S. Lewis says that if you really want to affect worldview, he made a comment, some little obscure comment, he said, you should write popular novels. And you think about it, because that's what the everyman reads and where they pick up their thought culture. TV is where most of this comes from. And I would say I love Star Trek. I'm a Trekkie and all that sort of stuff, but Star Trek is responsible for a lot of this stuff. Let me get him, then I'll get you. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
If you were trying to accomplish the same goal with non-science majors, how would your approach change?
Actually, my philosophy of science class is predominantly with non-science majors. At this point, there wouldn't be a whole lot of difference. Because teaching philosophy of science itself, you don't need science to teach it, really. Because even most people coming to the college have a basic idea of the inductive method. And so you can just say where this is wrong and how it kind of works. And that's kind of what we do in the philosophy of science, because it's a mixture, it's an honors program, so we get everybody under the sun. So in a sense, I actually took something from a non that involved the general populace and kind of threw it at specifically my science majors, which is intriguing. Now, I could tweak this. What I need to do is take some of my examples and tweak them to chemistry examples, and that would help tie into the class better. Yeah?
I think what you're doing is really helpful at the beginning level. I guess the question I'm thinking about is, what happens as they matriculate through undergrad and go on to graduate school? An example that I had, I'm a psychiatrist, but I went to a program where half the faculty were Christians. And we had in the beginning year a meeting at some of the faculty's house and came up with questions. And a few of us sort of owned a question and met with a smaller number of faculty and actually wrote publications and presentations on it. So you might take this as those that are curious to have an ongoing seminar through their time at ORU or even, you know, and maybe even write something. Because when they own it, not just a little essay, but really think through a presentation or a review article, they really will make it more a part of their lives, I think.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I'll be honest with you, in terms, really this falls into the ultimate category of integration of Christianity into your curriculum. And that's where it is. And I know we've been doing it. I've heard Union does a fabulous job there. I've often wondered, I'd love to go see how they do a lot of it. But one of your biggest problems at universities are doing things like this is you have to educate your teachers first, believe it or not. Because you'd be surprised, most Christian schools tend to pull people who've been coming out of the secular paradigm. And just because they're Christian is no guarantee they fully understand a lot of things that are going on, particularly scientists, because we haven't had a lot of humanities. I was fortunate. I did have a Christian undergrad, so I had some feel for this. I'd say it made me a lot more open to it. Okay, we're probably... Let's move on to the next presentation. How are we doing here? It's about time for the... Let's see. Our next presentation...